Because I'm a senior.
No, no, I've seen them many times in those contracts.
Yeah, I'm going for tea and then go back to my office. Oh,
yeah.
That's usually my mode of operation.
Yes, I'm not taking my luggage.
But Easter, of course. Easter.
The luggage is there.
So well, Easter had 2 weeks off school holidays.
Yeah,
that's right. And then, not
yeah,
then
that, no, I was
not having enough time to
use that. No, the whole thing said that the background of security is it's the going from the Schengen area to the Dutch area. Where there's a queue that goes right the way around the tunnel. But it sounded like the other day they'd given up with this, you know, trying to do it electronically, and just stamp everybody's passport.
Good morning, everyone.
It's trying to get some
people. It is a pleasure to welcome you today to the seminar, Skyward Spin Model, Black Hole Geometry, Chaos, and Quantum Teleportation. Now, at first hearing, this title might sound like it belongs to more in a science fiction script than in a physics seminar. Black holes, transportation, teleportation, and quantum geometry all in one place. But the interesting part is that none of this is speculative fiction. It is a concrete and rapidly developing line of research at the interface of condensed matter physics, quantum information, and quantum gravity. Today's talk explores how relatively simple quantum many-body systems, specifically spiral spin chains, can reproduce remarkable deep phenomena from space-time geometry and Hawking's radiation to quantum chaos and information transfer protocols such as Hayden-Fresco. This reflects a broader shift in modern theoretical physics, using controllable quantum systems as laboratories for ideas that were once thought to belong exclusively to energy physics or scale of unit experiments. It is my pleasure to introduce our speaker, Professor Yanis K. Paltos. He's a professor of theoretical physics at University of Leeds. His research focuses on topological phases of matter and quantum information, with particular emphasis on topological quantum computation and the role of anionic excitations in robust quantum processing. He has made significant contributions to our understanding of how concepts from quantum field theory, condensed matter, and quantum information interact. And he is the author of the widely used monograph titled Introduction to Topological Quantum Computation. Today, he will present a perspective that brings these threads together in a particularly striking way, linking spin systems to black hole physics and quantum information flow. Please join us. Please join me in welcoming Professor Paltos.
Thank you so much for the kind introduction, generously. Thank you. I'm really excited to be here and give a talk to you. I started as a high energy physicist, so that's my first love, and you know how the story goes. I would like to tell you about quantum simulation of properties of a black hole. And let me justify why simulation. You have the fundamental theory or model, and then you have the simulation of it. What can you gain by doing a simulation? For me, an analogy it explains it better. If you have emotions, this is an important thing, and you have language that describes it. Now, you can use language to articulate emotions, and that helps you to understand them, and helps you to control them, and it helps your partner also explain how things should be. So, I believe simulations can help a lot. And what I've tried to present you today is a single model, rather simple, that its quantum is a spin model, a spin chain, and its quantum properties can give rise to different aspects of black holes, quantum aspects of black holes that we're interested in, and that one topic of intense research recently. Let me give you a little bit of a picture, but there's a big group working on it. There are a few more people who are not there. Ryan is a big driving force to what I'll talk about today. Andrew, at the postdoc, is making sure PhD students are happy and don't go against me. Yasun, Matthew, and Tanmay, and there's Ian as well, and Aidan, and so on. So there's a big number of people working on this particular topic, actually, and there's a big large number of papers that we produced, but I don't want to go into technicalities today. I want to present you the model, and I want to explain to you how to get to use this model to get a glimpse to the fundamental theory that we would like to understand. And if I fail to do that, my talk also has some entertainment value. So it won't be wasted. A bit of an outline. So the properties of black holes that fascinate people is the Hawking radiation. This is purely quantum phenomenon. We know black holes, classical particles cannot escape when they fall inside the horizon, but quantum particles or Van der particles, as they predicted, can actually escape. And give rise to this quantum effect, actually escape in a very particular way that they look thermal side. And also another topic that attracted interest the last 20 years picks a lot is the chaotic behavior inside the black hole. So the gas of the black hole are really bubbling in terms of quantum properties, strong correlations that create optimal scrambling of quantum information, optimal messing, let's say, of quantum information. And apparently these properties do emerge, should be there in a quantum description of the black hole. What I'll present you instead is a single toy model. Okay? It's a spin chain that has some chiral interactions. I'll define them. And what we see is that similar to graphene that gives rise to relativistic Dirac fermions in the low energy limit. Similarly here, we'll get a quantum field theory description of this spin chain, and we see how curved geometry emerges. And that, if you have curved geometry that can indicate a black hole in the horizon, then you can observe Hawking radiation, so we can extract it. And also from the same model, you can observe the chaotic behavior. And actually something I'll try to convince you is that we do get the optimal scrambling. Of course, that's numeric. As we have a single model that can do both, we can look properties or phenomena of black holes that need both of these effects to come together. And the phenomenon that apply model is this quantum teleportation in black holes. And this Hayden and Prescu introduced this protocol to explain how quantum information can be teleported from inside the black hole to the outside. And in order to do that, so they devised it in order to explain the information paradox of black holes. And how they do it is by allowing Hawking radiation, so quantum matter, to escape from inside the black hole to the outside. And also they use the scrambling properties of the black hole. And that's what catapults, if you like, the quantum states from inside to the outside. So it's an ideal, let's say, phenomenon to be described with our model, and I'd like to present that to you. At the same time, as our model is a spin model, a spin circle, spin half, these are like qubits, can encode the whole thing on a quantum computer and simulate it and see these properties in an actual experiment. Physics similar to Ising or XY model or Heisenberg, your condensed matter physicists say hi. You can, well, what you do is actually you're cheating, our way of cheating. Yeah, because you go high energy, you have your theory, and then you introduce cutoffs and so on. So you actually, and then you can get some black hole physics. Let me very carefully put the comma between these two. I never talk about the combination of the two. disclaimer, I want to give my friends. So the black hole is an object, okay? And surprisingly, it's an object that we can extract information out of it, all these quantum properties, without actually having a quantum gravity model, a viable quantum gravity description. And that's because it's so extreme opposite with its curvature and its properties and its singularities and so on, that you can say something about it. For example, we know that in the same classical limit, we should have quantum gravity to get Hawking radiation. In the fully interacting limit, have the optimal scrambling, so on the strong correlation and the physics. This property has been recently probed by the SYK model, and this is a holographic view to a black hole. So SYK view is not a black hole system, it's a holographic view. And we know that the scrambling properties of this model and the scrambling properties of this model will be equivalent, will be the same. But this is not a geometric model, that's just a dual model. Yeah. And people demonstrated analytically and also recently numerically that this is why a model indeed has optimal scrambling behavior. And so that you deduce in that way that the black hole the 1+1 dimension, blah, 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 go ahead, optimal scrambling behavior. So, okay, this is my favorite slide. These are the results. Okay, I give you the nature version of the talk, first the results and then the methods. I'll present again the same slide at the end, maybe impacts you differently. And what let me describe you. We have a spin chain, and it's subject to a Hamiltonian as our Pauli matrices. Here is an XY pattern of interaction. And here is the chiral term, sigma dot sigma cross sigma. It tries to keep the spin size as disoriented as possible, three successive spin as apart as possible in orientation. I have couplings U and V. I will keep U of this. This is a free kind of Hamiltonian, and keep that constant, so you can remove it if you like. So I'll keep it constant throughout the chain. And what I'll do is I'll change the coupling V of the chiral interactions to be large on one side, and then we'll go small, we'll cross this coupling, and then we'll become zero at some point. So I'll be changing that in space. It won't be a constant, it should be in here actually. So this V is position dependent, and we'll be changing in space. And what we will see is that the point where V is larger than U is the inside of the black hole. The region where V is smaller than U is the outside of the black hole. You will have the expectation value of this operator actually is non-zero here, and it's zero here of the chiral term. So if you like, have my chain has a chiral face here and a non-chiral face here. So there's two materials, let's say, that combine or that touch each other. And the interface between these two materials is what we will call horizon. Okay. I will demonstrate all these things, of course, analytically. But there is an interesting aspect, is that if you go into the continuum limit of this model, similar to graphing, you'll see that you get the dispersion relation or the line cones outside here. So this XY term will give you the normal type of light cone. And as you increase B in position as you move this direction, this light cone will be tilting. Okay. This is one particular description of a black hole geometry. You tilt this, and when it over tilts and both future directions point towards the center of the black hole, classically no particles can escape. At the same time as this causes the tilting, also introduces interactions. So this is a free part, this is interacting, as you increase it, the interactions here are strong, and that's where the chaos comes in. So this term does two things. It tilts, creates a horizon, and when it becomes strong, it introduces strong correlations in here, while chaos. Also, when this B is small, here you're in the semi-classical regime. Mean field theory is well defined, and it's exactly, you get the geometric properties to expect. All right, let me now take it easy, and I'll get back to this slide. It's just a wonderful lesson in front of you. Let me take it easy and take you through a few condensed matter steps, let's say. This is the XY model. It's XX between neighboring plus YY. This S is the Pauli matrices, really. And I have a chain, I have the size, I have the spins living there. And what we do is this joint of Wigner transformation, that you translate the spin half particles into fermions. This is C, lattice fermions, if you like. So you can think that I have C fermions on every side. And I'm just tunneling from one side to the other and back, goes here and there. That's the physics, this is front. You can diagonalize this Hamiltonian by Fourier transformation. It's very similar to graphing. And if you introduce a unit cell that has two sides, then the dispersion relation, the energy over momentum, has these two branches, if you like. And this is a negative energy, this is positive, because it's a fermion, we'll fill it up all the way to zero in order to get a ground state. And the low energy physics is given by this cone here. And indeed, for small energies near the ground state, you get this linear dispersion relation. So today we have a Dirac particle, a one-dimensional Dirac particle. I'll be changing the couplings, or like, for example, the V and so on, or the U, and that will be massaging this Dirac cone, and that will be interpreted as a geometry, background geometry. Similarly, I could be massaging this coupling in a slightly different way, and I'll be encoding a gauge field, okay, classical background gauge field, and then you can couple it, you know, and then make it quantum and so on. But today I'll be speaking only, I'll restrict myself only to the geometry. Next, I'll be adding this type of interaction. And this involves three spins. This involves two spins. This has three spins. That's why I now make my chain into a triangular, let's say, ladder. It's this act between three spins here, and then I have another three, and another three, and so on. So the chirality, this is only the chirality term. I have pi 0, pi 1, pi 2, and so on. I can Jordan-Wigner transform the full Hamiltonian, and while this term gives me only the tunneling fermions, this one gives me several things. Gives me tunneling fermions between next to nearest neighbors. So I'm jumping between two, either on the blue ones or on the red ones, two strands of the ladder. And also gives you this interaction term, actually. This tells you that I can tunnel from here to there, control to the population on the third site. You see now, that's like a Gates theory, right? That's what all Gates theories are. If you see that's your Gates field, you know, you have Wilson line kind of effects here. But now this is gravity, yes? Module constraints and belts, those and so on. This is a type of interaction. And interestingly, these two terms, this is caused by that. This term is what tilts your cones, changes the direct cones into symmetric tilting ones that impose the geometry, while this term causes the interactions, the scrambling. It's amazing that this actually serves both, gives rise to both effects.
No problem. Yes.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Let's move to the semi-classical bridging. Is there a clock somewhere?
It's okay, I'm keeping the...
Keeping it. Yes, yeah, stop me. So, first of all, we move to the semi-classical regime because it's an interacting Hamiltonian. We can't exactly solve it, so we can't go semi-classically. This is equivalent to a middle-field theory, it's a consistent way how to get a free model, let's say, out of the interacting, and indeed it keeps the first two terms that we had. And then we can diagonalize it to see what's the dispersion relation. It is very similar, properly, to light cones, so you can think of it as light cones. And what you see is that for V0, you have the usual dispersion relation, and as you increase V, it tilts, and then at some point it tilts. And at some point, it over tilts, and both group velocities now point inwards. And that tells you that particles cannot escape, but antiparticles escape. So this is a very positive sign. Of course, we need to do the analysis a bit more carefully. This is the ladder we had. We introduce a spin or that includes the amplitude of this side and the amplitude of this side. So this is my unit cell. This is a spin I'll be using. You can Fourier transform it, expand it near the low energy limit. And what you get is a linear dispersion relation, but also you get a spy by an E there, which is related to the metric d mu nu. This is really the group velocity of your particle along here. And if you change it, it means you change the psi bind, which means that it creates curvature. This particular, if you do the steps carefully, you see that you have this metric, which has off diagonal terms as well. And if V is zero, and then you increase it to something larger than 2U, there are factors of 2 floating everywhere around here that have been not careful. Allow me that. So if V is larger than U or 2U, in that case, this changes sign, the signal starts to cross the horizon, which is about. Okay, so you can encode a Dirac. So this is the Dirac Hamiltonian single particle field theory, Dirac Hamiltonian, in the metric, this Gullstrand-Lebesgue metric. If I keep V fixed constant throughout my chain, I don't have geometry, I just have one coordinate system and another coordinate system. But if V changes, then this metric can be differentiated, has non-zero differentiations, and then curvature arises. And indeed, what we do is along the chain to change speed from zero to something non-zero. Here is where curvature, of course, emerges. When it's constant, there's no curvature. We choose what profile to give. We can give side-chain profile, anything we like, really. It doesn't satisfy the Einstein equations so far, but we can encode it to any profile we like. And indeed, by having from zero to something high, large and non-zero, we have this chiral phase, non-chiral phase, and the interface between the two. So indeed, this describes simulates a black hole physics.
So this is an annul, basically,
an annul
of the black hole, because you've got that metric there, which is different to the black hole metric, because you've got that dt by dx term, which would not be there in the normal, say, Schwarzschild metric. That one's there. So that's the gm over rc squared, that term. That gives you the radius of the black hole.
Oh, right, yes. I could put here, that's right, I could put here, depending on the profile I choose here, I could have a spectrum.
Yes.
Here. That's right. In these coordinates, you can have regular coordinates, you can have this GP coordinates. This is equivalent.
Yes.
Now the curvature has to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, the curvature depends on the derivatives of V. And this I can, this I can choose to be spectrum. That's right. Yes. So you're free to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just that for this particular spin model, you get the GP metric.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show you later on how to get the Riddler metric and how this actually does it describe a black hole. Okay, let me now describe you the photon radiation. Again, we have a black hole. You can prepare this two-dimensional generalization, 2+1. We prepare a state inside the black hole, quantum state, and then we let it evolve. It will move outside the horizon, and then we project the outside state, the outside Hamiltonian, and we look, what is the dispersion, the populations of the state on different eigenstates of the outside Hamiltonian, and we see that we get this exponential state, which means that you have a thermal state, so that it fits well to this thermal distribution.
Sorry, what is the meaning of the color scale on this plot here in the middle?
Density of your wave function.
Okay.
Yes, let's do it. Yes, the density of the wave function. And the important thing is that you get the thermal states, if you look at it only on the outside Hamiltonian, and you trace out the inside exactly at the horizon, you have this thermal distribution, and the temperature that appears here is the Hilton temperature, depending on the profile of V. So you use a certain profile, the curvature of V at the horizon, or the gradient of the horizon, gives you the Hilton temperature, and you fit that, and you see that indeed for various gradients of V and for various radiuses, the Hawking temperature, what you measure numerically out of this time evolution agrees with the curvature at the horizon, which is an unbelievable thing, that the things that are here depend only on the curvature there. It's a universal effect. Okay, so that's a picture of things that we did afterwards, but let me describe it now in the one-dimensional setting. So we have our chain, we have the profile of this large V, small V, here and there. We prepare a pulse inside the black hole, and then we let it evolve, and it will go left and right, but the part that goes to the right, it will be reflected on the horizon, part of it, and part of it will be transmitted. And the transmitted part actually has a thermal distribution when projected on the eigenstates of the outside Hamiltonian. So what happens? Here is space and here is time. We prepare a pulse here. We put a pulse really. And then we let it evolve. Some of it will go left, some will go right. When it reaches the horizon, it will be reflected. And some small part, this is very weak, this is a logarithmic scale. Some of it will go outside. So it's a very, very small part that does manage to escape. But the unbelievable thing is that it looks thermal. It's not truly thermal. This is a free Hamiltonian, right? But if you project it on the full part, it's thermal. Not only that, the temperature is fixed. That depends on the derivative exactly at the horizon. And we repeated that thing for different positions of the initial completely here, there, that is pretty flat, and you can change the position of the horizon. It's pretty flat. It means that the this time evolution gives you always a Hawking temperature out. It's a universal effect. It doesn't depend on many details of your model. And of course, if you come from the black hole community, you say, yeah, sure, that's Hawking radiation. But if you come from the condensed matter community, you put two materials, one chiral and one chiral, into contact. And then what you tell them is that if you put the population and it moves outside, it will be thermal and the temperature will be flat. So you can predict the thermal properties of this system as some universal properties of the system, which is pretty amazing if you think about it. Now, numerically, we can probe thermal properties, we can find eigenstates and so on, but experimentally it's hard to see if a system is thermal or not. So we devised another way how to measure the temperature of the system. We monitor the populations at the single site of a chain here. And at the beginning, these populations are zero. And as half of the wave comes and transmits, this population will increase, and then we'll go back to zero. So by monitoring one site here, we see that we get this type of behavior. If we change the slope here, the temperature changes. And what we notice is that this curve, this population, will peak at different time. So by monitoring the times where the peak happens, we draw this line. This is the time where this curve peaks. It goes on the line as inverse temperature, Hawking temperature. So if we set two points, let's say, and we calibrate this line, then we can measure when it peaks, and we can decide what temperature this black hole corresponds to. So it's a way how to monitor the temperature without having to probe the thermal properties. If assisted with experimental, it's very hard.
So your V prime here is the acceleration
that's
right, generated as a result of the
surface.
Of the surface.
Yes.
But it's the curvature of the space-time that's causing that.
It's a, yes, exactly. It's a, yeah, you need the
yes.
Delivery.
Yes.
That's right. Right. This is the universality. I mean, this is at the core, the derivative at the horizon determines the properties of the system far away. Which is anything else, if I had some homogeneities, randomness, interactions, this result was still the same.
Yes.
It's pretty cool, actually, if I were the condensed matter hat. This is like...
So if we go back to the particles that are inside, they're coming up to the boundary, the event horizon. Isn't it just tunneling?
Yes,
it's tunneling. Like, so
this
you've
is
got a quantum tunneling process.
Collaborators explain the effect as a tunneling.
Yeah.
It's tunneling, and the idea is that the transmission and reflection rates of the tunneling depend on the energy of the mode that comes in.
Yes.
And that causes the, makes the distribution to be like that, because energy dependent. That's right, indeed. Okay, so I described the Hawking radiation.
It's 7 minutes past. Just
yeah, right. Still you have 10 minutes.
I have 10 minutes only?
Yeah.
Ah. 20 minutes.
Chaos. Chaos,
12 hours.
We can see that this interacting term actually causes disease. It can be chaotic. Now, the question is, it's optimally chaotic. People use these autos, at the time order for relators, which basically tells you that I want to probe the properties from the Hamiltonian. So I put the thermal state, and then I evolve. I have two operators here. I evolve one in time, and the other I keep back. And I create these four operators at zero time, time t, zero, and t, while I distribute the rho in this particular way. Okay? I do that because I want to have some good properties, yes, of my relator here. I scale it so that this is equal to 1 and 0, and I look at it at time t. So basically, if you evolve something in time with a certain Hamiltonian, what its relation with the original state you had? And when this goes to 0 fast, or exponentially fast, then it means that we have interactions in chaos, and the fastest possible way that you lose information between the initial state and the final state because of the evolution of the Hamiltonian is the optimal scrambling. Classically, these two can be completely disentangled. You can go as crazy chaotic as you like. There is no any upper bounds. But quantum mechanically, because of unitarity, you can't move too fast away from an initial state. So there is a bound. Can exponentially decay, but there is a bound, and people found that, it depends on the temperature T of the thermal state, and the optimal bound is 2 pi T, and there is a J coupling, an overall coupling of your system. And it has been found also that black holes actually saturate this bound. This is a Lyapunov exponent. This is the Lyapunov exponent that tells you that these correlators die off exponentially fast, and this exponent is what quantifies how fast your chaos in the scrambling happens. And indeed, this lambda is bounded, and the optimal is a black hole. Okay, what I'm trying to show you now with the next few slides is that our model actually optimally scrambles. So what we want to show is that this Lyapunov exponent that we calculate out of the autos satisfy this equation. First, what we do is we fit parameters because we find different values of lambda for different temperatures, and we put fitting parameters A, B, and C. B is the exponent. And first, we fit this exponent B. If B is small, we find this exponent is 2. Outside the horizon. And when B is large inside the horizon, we find B equal to 1, which is what we want. Okay. And also the 2 is just, so basically we find outside the horizon as a function of temperature, the Lyapunov exponent has this quadratic behavior for small temperatures. And this also goes down for large and these are the even ones. That the chirality operator doesn't fit, so it will come down. And inside the black hole, we get this linear behavior, it's quite distinctive from there, and the linear is what we want. Then we don't want it to be only linear, we want it to be 2 pi j. So then we plot the coefficient a divided by pi b, which but this one, as the system size increases this way, this is system size speeds. The dotted lines are exact diagonalization we did, and I presented them a year or so ago in a conference that other people would work on the S1K model with that. And they became, there was one guy who became really furious, Garcia, yes, this guy in the S1K model. And they said, no, you can't do it. Your model is not all too old. It can't optimally scramble. You have group velocities and so on. It shouldn't work. I said, that's, I agree, but that's what we find. And he took finish. He comes up a coffee break. And he shouldn't be able. He chased me and said, no, we did honest. Well, that's what we did. I'm not claiming anything. And then the question has been working on that. with the SYK model. He had the experience, he knows how hard it is. So he said, he passed me the email of his postdoc that did the numerics for their model, and he ran away. So I contacted him, and they had this very sophisticated numerical method based on three of methods. And we managed together to verify the exact and then probe it much larger system sizes, which you see that indeed saturates to the value we want. So yes, if you're angry with what I present, please come and see me. this concludes that numerically we managed to do it. But the system is, this is just theory numerics, the system is at speed, so we can encode it on a quantum computer. And also the properties we like to see, like dispersion relations, energy momentum, Hawking radiation, or chaotic evolutions, are time evolutions. So that's things that you can do on a quantum computer with quantum algorithms. And I'll present in the two versions of this black holes. One is based on the XY model that is in the Riddler coordinates, and we have implemented, but also exists in the literature recently. And we want to, but this is non-interacting, doesn't have chaotic behavior. And then we implemented our model, and I'll show you what the evolutions are. Now the time evolution, you have the XY Hamiltonian, the Kairos Hamiltonian, and then you trotterize it, you interchange them. This is the basic block, and then you repeat it many times for some unit T. The XY is only a 2-qubit a gate, and it's actually native. We did it with NQCC, give us some time, we run it there, and we're very excited. This is a native to the IBM hardware that we use. And this is, let's say, the circuit. The chiral term is a 3-spin interaction term, or 3-qubit. Gates that you can decompose in terms of given gates, givens, so it has a different setup. So it's easy to do the XY model because you have this depth. If you want to do the chiral and the XY, you have to combine these two, so the depth of your circuit increases. So technically, it's harder, the coherence comes in. And here are the experimental results, all of those. Here's your walker, how it goes for the XY model, Riddler coordinates here. Okay, very similar physics. I don't want to go through. Your cones go like this when you cross the horizon. You change space and time. And these are the dispersion relations for different kinds of velocities. And this is exactly what we monitor one side here at the horizon. These are the populations go up and down. For different curvatures that we encode in our system, and you see that for all in one line, you can extract the Hawking temperature out of that. So we are very excited and proud of that. This is the same thing for the chiral model. These are experimental results. These are just numerics, but with the gates that we use. We're carrying out the experiments here, but because the depth of our circuit is a bit bigger, errors degrade the result. So we managed to get the dispersion relation, but you have the tilting of the cones. Now we're working hard to extract the Hawking temperature and the scrambling. These are the optics with the gate set. So wait for that. We're still working on this part. So that's where I want to get to. That's what numerically or analytically is hard to probe. Of that the quantum computer can give us this optimal behavior. So here it is. Let me flash again the slide. We have a model where the chiral term tilts your horizon and creates optimal errors. The same type of interacting term. And you see, it happens. You see, it's not the geometry increasing that causes the chaos. It's that by encoding the geometry of a black hole, you necessarily increase the coupling V. And when coupling V is strong, then the geometry loses meaning because of the strong fluctuations, okay? And gives rise to the optimal scrambling. So I hope that gives you a glimpse of how the black hole simulator that has both geometry and optimal scrambling works. Okay, so we have this chiral model that we've seen that it can give you Hawking radiation and that. And as a final thing, I'll go very, very quickly, the black hole teleportation. All right, that's
very good.
Thank you. That's the best way I could do to present you the why we're interested in teleportation from inside to outside of black hole with a straight face. So what happens is that here's your black hole. It is a quantum matter inside a black hole. And as time passes, this quantum matter leaks outside some part of it. Now what we have is Alice throws a part inside the black hole. The motivations are unclear, but it's kind of wrong. And then Bob is on the outside, and Bob is quite powerful guy or boy in collaboration. And they can distill EPR paths between the inside from this quantum matter. They can distill it and make some EPR pairs, quantum correlations from inside to the outside. The inside is involved with this optimal scrambling Hamiltonian, and Bob does exactly the same, but star evolution. And then some more Hawking radiation happens, some path from inside comes to the outside. Bob measures these two, and effectively what happens is that the quantum state sign gets teleported on the outside. The fidelity is low, but as more particles are radiated, the tunnel, you measure more and more, and the fidelity goes to one. The probability of success is a quarter, and that reflects the quarter of success of the quantum teleportation. And indeed, we did that with a spin system, and we found that indeed, the more measurements, this is the fidelity of the out state that increases as you do more and more measurements, and it saturates the bound of one or asymptotically, but pretty fast, actually. In our model, in order to encode these two evolutions, we actually put another black hole on the outside. So it's a dual binary system inside and outside. So this is equivalent black hole with black hole systems. This Greek Hamiltonian is the same there. And that's that, really. That's the quantum teleportation from inside to the outside that Aidan Preskill actually did in order to take it to Hawking that says, information paradox is real. And Preskill said, and then Hawking admitted, oh yeah, loves a bottle of wine. Like he liked to provoke in order to provoke. What do we have? Well, we have a model that is a relatively simple model that can do the Hawking radiation and the scrambling. And we used it in order to reproduce the highly impressive protocol within the same model. So it has the fundamental properties of Black Hole, and also the semi-classical. So fine, happy with that, because we would like to probe with it more physics that has to do with this disparity of semi-classical description and fully one description. Their ideas were the islands of inside black holes that have to do with the teleportation and the and how it cannot be described in classical picture. We want to see evaporation of the black hole where the horizon changes depending on the mass that is inside the black hole. So you can encode that and simulate and then derive what's the evaporation time, what's the page time, and so on. And there are possible quantum information applications. If you have a way, a deterministic way, how to do optimal scrambling, you can use it in order to hide information quite fast. People won't recognize where it came from, and then you can apply the reverse evolution to retrieve it. So there might be a possible way how to hide and retrieve information. And of course, we're working on 2+1 and 3+1 generalizations of the model. Just presented to you.
Thank you. Questions? First from room?
Very interesting talk, actually. I'll have to spend more time talking to you about it, but a couple of things that I'm thinking about is entropy. You didn't mention entropy. Now, chaos and entropy are quite similar, actually, because you get maximum chaotic, a maximum chaotic system is maximum entropy as well. Is that correct?
Correct, yes. This is a fundamental point. What we analyzed in paper with my student Yasun is how, in the semi-classical limit, if you have only the geometric description of a black hole, not the interactions, you get thermal behavior, but only if you trace at the horizon. If you trace away from the horizon, it's not thermal anymore, mm-hmm. your state. And indeed, you expect that because evolutions with free Hamiltonians do not cause thermalization. It's pretty amazing that when you trace at the horizon, you get something that looks thermal.
Mm-hmm.
So in principle, if you want to see something thermalizing, any partition of your state should look thermal. It's relatively small compared to the full size. And indeed, we verify that inside the black hole where the chiral interactions take place, the optimal scrambling takes place, the temperature actually appears to be infinite. So quite fast, the system becomes fully mixed inside the black hole. So there's no Hawking temperature there. But if you see, Hawking temperature is a different physics.
Mm-hmm.
Scrambling is different physics. And that's, I hope that this simple model helps us to understand these concepts.
So, but Hawking radiation is dissipation. So dissipation would tell you that you wouldn't be able to get maximum entropy because you're losing information all the time. And so what you're doing is you're actually creating a coherent structure, and you can actually generate in the strong field region inside the black hole, you could get coherent structures being generated rather than chaotic, but you get coherency from chaos.
Yes.
Have you looked at that?
I'm 100% agree with what you say. I haven't said it so clearly
right.
before, but I've been trying to demonstrate that exact thing.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. Yes, I need to talk to you more about it.
Yes.
We
calculated the entropies analytically
yes.
Of the black hole with free Hamiltonian with different partitions, and indeed, we find what you say. And numerically, we did it with the chiral interacting because it's very hard analytically to probe. And we find this infinite temperature
mm-hmm.
thing, which is different from the Hawking mm-hmm. Temperature thermality.
Thanks. Any more questions?
Hi. So you think that you've been able to put the black hole onto a quantum computer simulator, and you've done that for the XY coordinate system, and you're working on it for the chiral.
We did it also for the chiral. Just the because, and we've got the distortion relation, which is fantastic. For monitoring for the cloaking temperature, that's the next thing we are. We have the results, but because our circuits are rather long to encode the chiral thermal, the coherence hits us quite fast. Unfortunately, we picked up. Is anybody working for IBM here? We picked up IBM and this superconducting chip is in the coherent fast, and we didn't anticipate this problem. We thought the connectivity was exactly what we wanted to have large chains. If we had chosen ion transport, we need very few qubits on the not the systems are rather moderate, we don't need large. We've reached, we have coherent results and verify it.
So that was, so you can't answer the question that I had, which was, what are your limiting factors? So the coherence, obviously.
That's right, yes.
You yourself have written about error correction and so on. What are the limiting factors, and which are the major ones? What needs to happen to make this work? And you have plots, you've done it. So what? What are the factors that are limiting you at the moment?
Yes, very good. So, first of all, we're doing quantum simulations of a physical phenomenon. Our requirements are not as stringent as doing one computation where you want to find an answer. So we want to have a qualitative effect, okay, with some error bars. Yes? So this you can verify, and it's not too hard. Now, if you want, and you can find also some quantitative values there, like the whole temperature and so on, but it's an effect you're after. Quantum computation is, in order to factorize numbers, an extremely demanding thing. And of course, they care about quantum error correction and so on. In our case, yes, we want to keep it coherent, but the systems that are variable can do actually wonders for what we're interested in.
And in your case, is the IO an issue? So certainly when you look at particle physics problems, and often you're trying to push a whole event or even just a set of hits or something in tracking a track trajectory finding algorithm, and even that is too much information to try and push on and off. I can only imagine you have lots of information here that you're pushing on and off as well, but maybe you can, why is that not limiting you, or is it limiting you?
Information pushing on and off?
Yeah, so because you have a certain amount of data you need to pass to the processors and to read out from the processors.
That's right, yes. So what we have is a chain, which is every 6 qubits. Then we apply our gates, which is the Hamiltonian, the time-involved thing, and then we measure. And the measurement is the distribution of your wave functions, the amplitude, the probabilities. So you use all of those information, you repeat it several times to build a distribution. Now, if your circuit is too long, then temperature, what you get might be more probabilistic than quantum physics. So you try to extract from it the quantum properties. Now, there are different techniques. One is mitigation. So you can guess, or you can manage your data to remove the thermal part and keep the quantum by extrapolating and so on. Or do quantum error correction, that it doesn't guess, but corrects the thermal part and makes it pure again. So these are different techniques. We are more on the mitigation side of things at the moment, rather than the quantum error correction, but we have ideas for the quantum error correction as well to apply.
Thank you.
I'm sorry if I didn't answer your question.
No, you did. Exactly. I think it's a very different type of problem. Probably your problem is more akin to the big aim of putting a QFD, quantum field theory, fully onto quantum computing.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah. And then see time evolutions. That's what quantum computers can do.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for the wonderful talk. So I really enjoyed it, but unfortunately I'm not as good as math as I want to be. So first question was about the Hamiltonian that you showed.
Mm-hmm.
So you said that the coupling fee is something that varies according to position, right? So is the way that chiral spin system shows a black hole, is it by like varying that V value according to that event horizon
That's right,
across
yes.
zero?
So in order, so V encodes, changing V encodes a curvature, and by changing from small values to large values is what gives you the horizon at some point. Indeed. So you need this varying V, because a black hole is an inhomogeneous system, if you like. So we need this varying parameter to encode it. And it's interesting that smaller large V correspond to two differing materials. One is chiral and one is non-chiral, but of course they're connected.
Also, when you showed that simulation of Hawking radiation in 2D, I got the impression that it wasn't like a circular
Yeah,
symmetry.
you're right. You're right. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, it seemed like a 90-degree like rotation.
This because it's a square lattice, we didn't know that. So the square lattice will have the there's a Manhattan distance, and there's many things that spoiled the perfect rotational symmetric properties. Yes.
Thank you. I
You're
was
right.
quite tempted.
And also we prepared in principle, we wanted an S wave kind of encoding as spherical, but we put populations in this kind of symmetric way. So this a C4 symmetry that also the radiations at the of the initial state that also satisfying in the final state. Yeah, it's dirty. Dangerous not to
Any more questions from the room or from Zoom?
That's one real quick one. So you kind of compared to a quantum limit and a semi-classical limit. If you look somewhere between those two limits, do you think there's meaningful information to extract from the muddy details in between those two places?
Yes, I would. This is what we want to do, to see how physics changes when you move from one to the other, semi-classical too. So there's this idea of quantum islands that one of my collaborators is well, he's an expert, where it's what if you don't perform quantum teleportation, but the system, due to the scrambling, effectively teleports. Now, this happens only if you have interactions. If you don't have interactions, this doesn't take place. So the quantum islands are in this semi-classical limit. What you will need to remove in order to imitate the fully interacting limit. So there's another way of quantifying interactions, the rate of generation of these events, comparing them to a free Hamiltonian, okay, but in time evolution. So there are different ways to quantify strong correlations, interacting Hamiltonians of a ground state, but now we are looking at the quantum evolution, quantifying their effect on the quantum evolution. It's very exciting. That's what we want to move. So for example, you can monitor the entropy on the outside, and the teleportation that will happen naturally will change the entropy from what if it wasn't. And that would be fantastic to see it in one system.
So we had a very interesting discussion right before about the quantum gravity, but why should I have all the fun? If you'd like to chat with the speaker after the session, please join him for lunch. And let's thank our speaker for taking the question. Thank
you.
A very good talk.
This one has to fight for
the other.
Thank you.
Just a little bit.